Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our weekly Hoops HD report, and I'm your host here in the top center square, Chad Sherwood, joined by David Griggs, Joby Fortson, John Titel, John Slica back with us this week as well. And this is the show where we go over all the major news, all the major conferences, and talk about God knows what else.
I don't know. We'll figure it out when we talk about it.
Right. We tried to do a game plan this week. I think I already blew it, so who knows.
Right. But, good job, Chad.
But I guess one of the big stories from this week, though, was it was Big 12 SEC Challenge. Before we even get to some of the results here, David, I want to throw this over to you today. I heard in the news today that they just extended the series for 6 more years. It's going to continue to be played on a Saturday during January during conference play. But yeah. What are your thoughts on the challenge? Do you think this is a good thing to have?
I do. It's just been interesting how it's evolved. Initially, it was a scheduling agreement. And I think prior to this, there was the Hardwood Classic between the Big 12, well, what's still the Big 12, but the 12-team Big 12 and the 10-team Pac-10. And the whole idea was attendance was kind of waning, too many bye games. November and December is kind of at a time when football is really on the spotlight, and they wanted something that would create a spark and get people into the arenas, and it worked. And after that broke off, they started a – I don't even know if it was a classic as much as it was a scheduling agreement with the SEC. That became the event that it did. And then they were like, well, this event, it's being overshadowed because of football and it's too early in the season. We need to move this to mid to late January. So it's just been kind of funny to watch it evolve. I'm fine with it either way. At first, I was kind of against it simply because I was, at the time, complaining about the lack of quality in November and December. But it seems like we've talked about this. That's just less and less of an issue now. The other thing that I think would be interesting, and I know not everybody agrees with this, what if the games weren't predetermined, if it worked sort of like the old bracket buster where they weren't scheduled until 2 or 3 weeks out? You know, we still got Kentucky, Kansas, but some of them were kind of busts, like K-State, Texas A&M. Who wants to watch K-State blow out Texas? Never mind.
A&M.
Well, keep in mind, next year we'll also get the best of both worlds because the Big 12 is also adding a scheduling arrangement with the Big East starting next year, which I think is going to be in either or so. Possibly for one set of challenge, you do fixed matchups. For another, maybe you do decide them a couple weeks in advance, bracket buster series.
Yeah, but well, what do you think of that?
With like, one caveat, guys, I would say that the home teams probably have to be predetermined.
They would be. Like, just say the SEC's at home this year.
Yeah, SEC. Yeah, you could do the whole conference, you know, and switch back and forth, certainly.
Well, I don't think you should have the whole conference, but I think you predetermine and say, okay, you know,
Kentucky,
Kansas, West Virginia, Kansas State, Iowa State, and I don't know. Oklahoma are the home teams, right?
Yeah.
Because the ACC Big Ten has a rotation where that exactly, like, I already know that, you know, that, for instance, Virginia is going to be at home next year because they were at Maryland in the challenge this year. We don't know who it's going to be. It'll probably be Wisconsin for the 80th year in a row. But
well, that's what you get locked into when you don't do the whole conference. Like, you essentially can't play half of the conference. But anyway.
Titel, I think you have some thoughts on this also, correct? Are you in favor of it continuing or against?
I mean, I loved the bracket buster when they had it. So if they want to do something like that, I'm not going to challenge it, pun intended. But, like, I'm a big fan of Ain't Broke, Don't Fix. Like, it's a really nice midseason opportunity for some teams to get their resume boosted. Like, Kentucky was doing fine. When you beat Kansas, you go up a whole seed line, if not more. If you're Texas and you're squarely on the bubble and you get destroyed by Georgia, like, that kills your resume. It's nice to see, like, I understand pre-planning is nice and stuff now if you want to get, quote-unquote, better matchups. But for every good matchup you get, like at Kansas-Kentucky, you're still going to be stuck with an Oklahoma State bandy. So I don't know that that's such a great idea.
Well, let's go ahead and pull up some standings. And let's start off with the Big 12, which did win this series 6-4 after a couple games earlier in the week before that. But let's start things off with Stalika. Let me bring you in here on Texas Tech. They suffered the the loss to Kansas State, finally got a win over Arkansas. But is a Red Raiders team heading in the wrong direction here?
Well, this is a team that did stop the bleeding on Saturday, and they're going to be playing as we speak against TCU with Horned Frogs off to an early lead. But we saw a similar pattern last year where Texas Tech did get off to a white-hot start, did have a bit of a late January, early February swoon, but by the time they got to the NCAA tournament, they seemed to be much more happier that they were out of the Big 12 gauntlet and actually made their first run to the Elite Eight. So we could be seeing a similar script playing out to last season.
Right. Actually, a big game as we record this. They're hosting TCU tonight. We're recording this left 9 p.m. Eastern on Monday evening. David, we already mentioned the Kansas loss to Kentucky. I've got the Kansas team sheet here on the screen. It should be coming up any second now there on the left. What about these Jayhawks without Azubuike? I just don't think they've looked like the same team the last couple of weeks.
They don't. Now, I mean, when you look at those quad one wins, that is swollen. It might be more than anybody else. But when, you know, if you were going –
And they're good quad one wins, too.
Yeah, good quad one wins. Yeah. Very good. If you're going just off of that, then how do you not give them a one seed? But when you start to look at the rest of it, 1-4 in true road games. One of those losses at West Virginia, another against Arizona State. These are teams that you typically almost never see a one seed lose to once, much less twice. And they've kind of gone, and this is by protected seed standards, not by overall NCAA standards, but by protected seed standards, they're in a bit of a tailspin right now. And it pinpoints to the exact moment Azubuike got hurt. They just haven't been the same. And it's really unfortunate because this was a national title, a Final Four / national title contender caliber team.
On the right side there, Tytel, let me bring you in first on this. The Baylor Bears may be the hottest team in the conference. You know, they only got Alabama. Well, I mean, they got Alabama, I guess, which is a decent, not a great SEC team. I would have liked to see them match up with somebody a little bit tougher, but you know, four in a row now.
It is. Arizona couldn't get Alabama, and, like, Baylor's beaten both of them, so they must be doing something right in Waco. Hard to explain away the two Tier 4 losses, albeit by a total of 4 points in early in the season, but like David said, how Kansas is going downhill after losing Azubuike, somehow Baylor's going uphill after losing Tristan Clark. He's done for the year after left knee surgery. They've won four in a row. Unfortunately, their next six opponents could all beat them. Oklahoma, which is going on as we speak, TCU, Texas, Kansas State, Oklahoma again, and Texas Tech. They're also very undersized. After Clark's injury, four starters, 6'5 or shorter. So I don't see them being able to bang against the big boys in the Big 12 unless there are guys like Azubuike who are hurt. So maybe they can steal one, but it's going to be tough sledding. Although Baylor was 9-6 2 weeks ago, I was ready to write them off, and I was dead wrong.
Yeah. Joe, do you have some thoughts on them too?
Yes. Now, I love the fact that conference lineup, you saw that they're tied for first in the loss column right now. That's pretty awesome, dude. Are they the ones? We would have never thought it, that break this Kansas streak. John is right about the loss of Clark, but at the same time, they're getting Mastin back. And that's been a big deal. If you saw that Alabama game, he was all over the court. You know, just really effort. And you just got to love it. Baylor, you know, when we get the SEC, I'll mention a little too real quickly. We viewed the Baylor-Alabama game as kind of a bubble matchup, you know, kind of play in your end. Well, Baylor's definitely in most brackets right now with that play-in. But here's the thing is the bubble's so weak, they may have just also gotten a win against the field at the time.
But I think Mekhi Mason is another guy for Baylor that's also back, so keep an eye on him as well.
Yeah. Sleek, let me stick with you. One other team that's heading in the very wrong direction of the Big 12 is the Texas Longhorns. They laid a complete egg at Georgia in the challenge. They also lost the TCU game earlier the week. Well, you know, 11-9 overall, that's not going to cut it, is it?
Well, this is a team that's run hot and cold, and I think another one of their iffy losses that we thought back then was also Providence at home, but –
And Radford and VCU all at home and Texas Tech at home, yeah.
I mean, Radford is great by under-the-radar standards, but not NCAA tournament standards for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, three, losing
Four, I don't call them a state, doesn't help either.
It's really a weird profile. I mean, those four wins are four very good wins, but so many. I mean, you've got losses, the Oklahoma State and Georgia road games, VCU Providence Radford home games. David, you had a comment on them?
Well, I mean, you said the wrong direction. You assume that down is not the direction they want to go. Why are you being so presumptuous, Jed?
One more question here before we move on. Ty, let me throw this over to you. Shaka Smart, is his job in trouble if they can't make the tournament this year?
I mean, like, if he knew that he was going to have players with leukemia, like, I think that that might be a built-in excuse. I think he's okay. And, like, he didn't know if the big man last year, Mo Bamba, was going to be a one-and-done. And, obviously, he's playing, like, well in the NBA. I mean, I think it's too early to be like, this is a guy who's proven he can win with talent that is not power conference talent. And I don't think he becomes a bad coach just by moving up and losing. I agree that, like, if he goes 11-20 again, that's not great, but I think that he'll be able to right the ship. He's in a tough conference with tough players.
But to be fair, if you're talking about a possible 2001 Georgia or even 2016 Vanderbilt, I think that was a year where they had 15 losses during the regular season. Texas is one of the few teams that could absorb that many losses and offset it with more than enough quality wins, but they just need the quantity right now. Right.
Well, excellent point, John. And the example is the J&G with Texas. 44 is still inside the bubble. The J&G, as the maker of it, punishes you for an 11-9 record severely. The fact that you're still up there with that 11-9 record due to those four strong quadrant one wins means that maybe this is that exception, like Vandy and Georgia.
I got the upcoming schedule up on the screen. Big weeks for both Texas and Kansas, who play each other tomorrow night, Tuesday night. Then Texas this weekend at Iowa State. Kansas hosting Texas Tech. Those are a few games to circle. Maybe also that TCU-Baylor game on Saturday as well. Let's go over to the other half of that SEC Big 12 challenge, though. The SEC, where Tennessee continues to be the number one team in the nation after getting West Virginia, which should have been a good game, but was not because West Virginia has been awful this year. The other notable win, we already discussed the Kentucky win, but Joe, let me start with you on that Kentucky win. How about this Kentucky team?
They've completely – this is not the same team that got – yeah, I use the term boat race a lot. There were a lot of boats getting raced earlier in the season when they lost by 30. It all changed when they beat – they in the preseason – besides UNC Greensboro, they weren't really beating anybody that's even an NIT team. Then they beat North Carolina, and it's like the whole team got confidence after that moment. They could beat anybody. And Kentucky, I mean, do I think Kentucky, I pick them for the Final Four right now? No, I wouldn't. But you know what? I would pick them as a 2 seed in a regional final.
David, LSU was not part of the SEC Big 12 Challenge, did win a road game at Missouri, but now 6-0 in conference, and I think very quietly one of the top teams in the nation are moving up into that protected seed type of range.
Very, very quietly. They were quiet for most of the game for about 38.5 minutes.
At the end of the day, it was a win.
But they did win. And if you pull them up, their profile's a little blah, but it's – it's decent enough, and to have them where they are, and then with the games that they have remaining, like Ole Miss. I mean, really, the win at Ole Miss is really the only one that's against the team that we solidly have in the field or in the field at all. So if they're going to get up to the protected seed range, like they got to beat Mississippi State, they probably need to beat Auburn at home.
Everybody can beat Auburn these days.
Yeah, everybody can beat Auburn. It's a pastime. They're going to get their chances. I'm not entirely convinced that they're there just yet, though.
Right. Let me ask you another.
If they win at Kentucky, I'm going to be all about this LSU.
Well, Tytel, very strange when you look at the SEC standings and tied for third place there with Kentucky, you see South Carolina 5-1, 10-9.
Talk about should Shaka be fired. I really thought Frank Martin was going to get fired. And again, I was much like with Baylor, dead wrong. This team was left for dead. They were 5-7 after December. All five wins against teams outside the top 150. Two of the losses. One was a home loss to Stony Brook. Another was a road loss at a Wyoming team that is currently 5-15. somehow they were able to rebound. I agree. They did lose their last two road games at LSU and at Oklahoma State, so it's certainly not smooth sailing. But 5-1 in conference is still good. Home wins over good teams, Mississippi State and Auburn. I think they're going to get destroyed at Tennessee on Tuesday. However, I thought the Vols would destroy Vanderbilt last week, so you never know. A very weird mix of experience with this team. Three freshmen and two seniors among the top five players in the rotation. So if they don't win it this year, I think it's going to go further downhill next year. But then eventually, if the guys stick around for 4 years, that freshman class is going to lead them to, I think, good heights in the years ahead.
I agree. But if you look at this profile here, I mean, this is not a tournament profile, despite the only thing I really like is that 5-1 conference record. The home loss to Stony Brook, the loss at pathetically bad Wyoming. You can't lose games. You don't have the margin to lose a game to an Oklahoma State when you've lost those games earlier in the season. You have no margin for error. You have to win every single game that you're supposed to win, like the Oklahoma State game, and then pull off a few upsets like the games at Kentucky or at Tennessee or one of those. Stalika, let me bring you in here on that team we mentioned already also, though. How about the Auburn Tigers? How desperate is Auburn now for some good wins?
Well, they were going to be desperate enough after losing at Angry Frank's bunch last week.
I got their upcoming schedule. Missouri, three straight home games, winnable all. Missouri, Alabama, Florida.
Well, they're all going to be must wins at this point. And their next road game at LSU, they're going to really be desperate if for whatever reason they stumble at home in any of those three. And Missouri's going to be coming in a bad mood after pissing away a big lead against LSU over the weekend.
Okay. Auburn dropped out of the rankings. What the hell? I've been so big on Auburn these past few weeks. I'm just destroyed that they're not ranked.
But I think we're also missing one of the big stats of the week, though. It was the first time in 11 years that Tennessee came in with the number one ranking. Once again, deja vu, had to go to Vandy, but unlike this time, Grant Williams goes 23 for 23 from the foul line, single-handedly puts the balls on his back to avoid another upset bid.
Yeah, the couple teams that have big weeks, Alabama, who I think would all agree is clearly right on the bubble line, hosting Mississippi State and then at Auburn. I think this is a huge week for the Crimson Tide coming up among these other games on the screen there. Kentucky, Florida has been good in recent years. David, I don't think it's quite as good this year, but
no, it's not. Well, half of it is.
Joby, let me go over to your conference here, the ACC. You being our Virginia guy, I want to ask both you and Titel about Virginia. But let me start with you quickly. Your team did pick up a pair more.
And we did Virginia. I shouldn't be saying we, but Virginia did what it's supposed to be. Just completely run out of the gym, Wake Forest, and going to South Bend and running them out. You know, it showed that they're equal to the task that Duke did tonight. So I think poor Notre Dame is just undermanned right now, plain and simple. Virginia maintained their number one seed. I think Duke likewise has, you know, Duke beat Georgia Tech and Notre Dame, you know, and a good Pitt win. They maintain their number one seed, though Georgia Tech did give them a lot of nervousness early, though. The talent shown.
Yeah, Tata, you had the same Virginia team. I think you had some thoughts on them as well.
Just a very nice bounce back after the Duke loss. They went 2-0. Huge February. Is there anybody in the nation who has a harder pair of back-to-back games than hosting Duke and at North Carolina back-to-back next month?
Two days apart, Titel, too. It's a Saturday-Monday turn.
Love it. It's amazing that they have so much on offense. You know about the pack line defense. You know about leading the nation defense this year. Top three in the nation in both offensive and defensive efficiency. And the pack line is designed to, like, stop any penetration. But if you can't make threes against this team, you're dead. And apparently everyone's dead. They lead the nation. They don't even allow 25% behind the arc.
Yeah. David, we saw Syracuse do what they've been doing all season, get a blowout win, get a blowout loss.
Schizocuse. They weren't just blown out. That's an understatement for what they were. I mean, they just got their doors blown off. And I was about ready to say after the last two or three weeks, well, 2 weeks, that Syracuse had finally leveled off and had figured it out and was playing some good ball. And then they just go out there and get absolutely destroyed. I don't know what to do with this team. I don't know, like, how Ty Tell looks at him, because he's trying to not decide for himself what to do, but decide what other people are going to do with them. That's pretty rough. That resume is all over the map. You got it there on the screen.
Yeah.
Old Dominion, for a time, I thought that they were really good. If you follow Under the Radar, they started off pretty good and have tapered off in a big way.
Well, Tytel, you have a response to that? I mean, how do you look at a team like that?
I often laugh when you guys talk about schizocues, but when you look at it, like, who on earth can win at Duke and then lose by double digits hosting Georgia Tech? I mean, you guys are 100% right about that. It's very hard to figure out how the injuries are going to play in, because I have zero doubt that Duke wins that game if Reddish or Jones were healthy.
I disagree. I think Syracuse wins by more. That's just the kind of crazy team they are.
I think that that win is going to hold a lot of water in March. That being said, like, they have a lot of great chances to improve the resume, especially late in the season with Duke at UNC in Virginia. They cannot stumble against the Wakes and BCs of the world like they did against Georgia Tech.
I think they beat Duke, North Carolina, and Virginia, and lose to Wake and Boston College.
Stalika, the Louisville Cardinals, who have one of your favorite head coaches that desperately back, on the right there. But how about this team continue to win 5 in a row now?
Well, they added wins against NC State and NC State and Pittsburgh here.
Pitt this week, a pair of home wins. Hosting North Carolina next weekend, though. Big game. Is that not?
Yeah, going to be a little bit of a revenge game, but as NC State has proven, you can't overlook a team like Wake Forest, even as bad as the Deacons looked against Boston College over the weekend.
Yeah, I'm really loving the way this Louisville team is playing right now. I think that they are on pace for a protected seed, which I did not think anybody predicted heading into the season. One other game we've got to mention, though, Joe, we'll bring you back in there. NC State with a miracle win over Clemson, or maybe it was Clemson doing what Clemson does.
Four missed free throws by Clemson. Definitely, we're handing it to NC State. NC State's in an unusual position, and they have two criteria. There are two criteria that really are focused at for bubble teams. One is, okay, if we're going to give you this shot, can you actually beat someone in the field sort of thing? NC State has one such win against the Auburn team, which we pretty much were panning just about 10 minutes ago. So that's not going to hold a ton of water at that point. What about the other tiebreaker? Well, how did you schedule? You know, how was your out-of-conference schedule? They are 349th out of 353 teams. 349th. We have seen with Syracuse and others getting punished for being right on the line. No. You're out. NC State has a gaudy record. They don't have a ton of wins to back that gaudy record. If they do not take care of business, if they do not get a few more wins against the top part of the league, they're more in trouble than you normally would think a 16-4 ACC team would be.
And this is a team that was also saved by the bell on Saturday by Braxton Beverly against Clemson.
And with the four missed free throws by Clemson. They will get their shot tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is a big game. I'm not saying they're going to win it, but they win tomorrow night against Virginia. That changes the entire season outlook for them in a lot of
ways. I'm saying they're not going to win tomorrow.
I don't think so.
I'll tell you what. Before we even start the show, we're doing some comparisons. I want to bring one up there. On the left here, you see NC State's current team sheet under the net formula, where they are 29th of the net. NC State is currently 107 in the old RPI. And on the right there is NC State. If this was the team last year, when we used the RPI, the team sheets, you've got no quadrant one, and two home wins over quadrant two. It's not much. A Tytel, isn't that team sheet on the right there a stay-home team sheet?
Yes, but the reason that I have them in my bracket and others do as well, and the rankings have them in the rankings, is to make a very good point that it is a brand-new season, but it's also – well, it's a brand-new season with a brand-new ranking system, and It looks pretty similar, like, in terms of the metrics and stuff. And the Auburn thing, like, just jumps up or down a few points versus up a few points. But I think this could be just a fortunate break for Coach Keats that, like, last year they don't make it, and this year they do.
Yeah, but all those quadrant two wins, which at least give you a little meat to your resume, are dropping to quadrant three, David, if this was last year. And right. That's why we see this huge difference of 29 in the net versus 107 in last year's RPI.
Yeah, 29, that's a difference of 78, if my math is correct. So, slight difference. That's the tournament plus 10. That's the difference.
That's the difference between wearing white in the NCAA tournament and going to the CBI. Let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule here in the ACC before we move over to the Big Ten. Tomorrow night, that big Virginia at NC State game that we already mentioned. We also have a non-conference game coming up on Saturday, St. John's at Duke. We'll get to the Big East here in a few minutes, but that's a huge game for St. John's if they could somehow find a way to win. And, of course, North Carolina, Louisville on Saturday as well.
And look at what Louisville has to do 2 days later, traveling to Blacksburg.
Yeah.
So that's a tough 1-2 punch for them.
And they better not overlook Wake Forest on Wednesday night with those two games coming up. It's one of those games you might kind of just not pay attention to almost.
Right.
Before we get to the Big East, though, we do want to take a quick look over at the Big Ten. And, Tytel, let me start off with you with probably the game of the weekend and Purdue and what they did against Michigan State.
Dominated, not from start to finish, but from start to halfway through the second half and then almost blew it. But a win's a win, and they deserve a lot of credit, and I'm going to keep moving them up my rankings. This team was 9-6 just a few weeks ago, 5 wins in a row. Wisconsin, the amazing Rutgers team, of course, Indiana, Ohio State, and Michigan. Carson Edwards, I knew he was going to make a serious run at Big Ten Player of the Year. He could make National Player of the Year, especially if the Duke guys split the vote amongst the two of them with Zion and RJ. 73 three-pointers is number one in the nation. Almost 25 points a game is top 5 in the nation. He's got 11 games left, and the key, not a single one of them is against a Spartan or a Wolverine.
Yeah, and Joby, a few weeks ago we were talking about this Purdue team. Can they even make the tournament? Your J&G has them as a 4 seed right now, and on the verge of coming to 3.
That's exactly what, and I actually agree. I don't know if they're 13, but I think 16, you know, in other words, last team in the protected CCOM. Yeah, after the Michigan State win, I think I'm there. And the problem Purdue had was, as you point out, the 9-6. You know, the overall record was a problem. They were a combination of the Texas team we referred to earlier, as well as Butler, which we'll refer to later as, oh, everybody's good win, which turns into not a good win after a little while of everybody beating you. That's gone. They have the solid wins. I said they can't go 10-10 in conference or they're in trouble. 7-2, they're not in trouble. You know, I mean, they're
not in your trouble anymore now. Another team here, put them up on the right side next to Purdue here, Stalika, Michigan, sitting there with only one loss now. How good is this team, especially after they went to, even they struggled with Minnesota, they got the home win, but then they went and just crushed a really struggling Indiana team on the road.
I wouldn't put too much into the Indiana game because beating the Hoosiers has become a pastime, judged by their 6-game losing streak. But even for Michigan, I don't put too much into the Wisconsin loss because that's always going to be one of the more difficult games to play in the Big Ten. And granted, they were playing a desperate Minnesota team, but managed to pull that out. They've got more than enough goodwill in the bank when you go back to November when they start out with a crushing win at Villanova. They still have the North Carolina win in the bank, and their win against Purdue looking more and more significant by the day.
Right, and if you look at their upcoming schedule, the game at Iowa this week, other than that, it may not be till the two Michigan State games that they may have real trouble the rest of the way, David. I mean, this team may only lose twice or three times all season.
Well, depending, yeah, they're definitely running downhill, and it's going to be kind of fun seeing those, you know, two of their last four games are against Michigan State, and they may play a third time. If you're doing the math there, they could play three times in 3 weeks. How much fun would that be?
Another team we want to mention, Joby, I know you want to discuss this Maryland team and what they've been doing.
Oh, Maryland. I want to apologize for what I said a few weeks ago. Wow, Maryland's turned around. Smith's done it. They're much better than what they were, blah, blah, blah. And then, wow, talk about barfing on your shorts.
I mean, that game at Madison Square Garden. Yep.
My goodness. Now, and here's the thing is, they're so dismissed after one game, against Illinois, that Chad, when he's going, wow, Michigan could really run the table. Look, they play nobody. They have two games against Maryland. A good team, you know. Everybody, even the AP still ranks them. I mean, every metric has them as a top seven seed or better, you know. But they were in almost, you know, when we talked about Purdue 2 minutes ago, I said, 15, 16, the last four seed. That makes a lot of sense. That's what we were saying about Maryland a week ago. Purdue has replaced them, and Purdue might not give it back. Watch me jinx the heck out of them.
David, I want you to talk about two teams that are heading the wrong direction of this conference. I'll pull them both up here. On the left side, Indiana. On the right side, Tim Miles.
We had one of the great we have this email thread where we're all on it, and some other people that do the mock committee and do other things are on it. And Galen Clavio, who hasn't been on the show for a while, had a wonderful thing. I had made the comment that Indiana was in a tailspin. He corrected me and said, no, it is a death spiral.
Six in a row,
all by double digits, and not all of them too really good.
And wait, what do they have coming up in two nights? Very dangerous Rutgers road trip.
And I don't see them coming out of this, because when you look, the Rutgers road trip is dangerous. Rutgers has not been the easiest team to beat on the road, and Indiana hasn't done anything to make it seem like, to make you think that that's going to be easy. But even if they win it, they go to Michigan State. They have Iowa coming in, who has been playing pretty well lately. Ohio State at home, somebody has to win.
I'll tell you what, David, I look at that schedule, other than the Rutgers home game to end the season, they could potentially lose every game left on there.
They should win it.
The way they're playing right now, maybe Illinois and home against Rutgers are the only ones that I'm looking at as saying, oh, those are wins.
Yeah, and part of me, I think that it is part of it, not all of it, it's certainly not all of it, but part of it is the 20-game format causing the Big Ten to eat itself a little bit, because Indiana and then Nebraska on the right, these were teams that – before conference play, you had 10 teams inside the bubble, and instead of maybe 7 or 8 getting there, are we going to see even fewer than that? Now, Nebraska has other issues. They're dealing with that dark web conspiracy that's constantly undercutting.
Let me tell you what, though. While we try to mute David there, Tytel, is there one other team, and I'm going to pull them up on the left here, that is on the verge of maybe making some noise? They've got the chances and not that much bad on the resume, if I can type it in correctly, which I can't. But what about Northwestern? Are they a team we need to start taking a little bit of a look at here? And let me pull them up for you, because I don't know how to type tonight, apparently. David just totally threw me off.
But apparently you didn't get into Northwestern. That's okay. Right. I mean,
they're not there yet. I'm not going to make that argument, but are they getting close?
Only because they can't get farther away. I mean, losing all these January games doesn't help, but most of them are on the road, and most of them are to Tier 1 opponents. Huge gap in the old Tier 1 win column. Plenty of chances, as they only have one team outside the top 100 in their final games. Non-conference strength of schedule is terrible. Against the board is terrible. Road, terrible.
Okay.
Many reasons why they can't get in.
I guess, though, when you're looking at teams like Indiana and Nebraska, and maybe even Maryland, starting to fall apart there. We'll find out tomorrow night as when Northwestern goes to Maryland, just how good they are. But if they pull off that win, I think we've got to start paying some attention. But let's go to a quick look at the upcoming schedule in the Big Ten. Stalika, let me bring you back in on this. I just mentioned that Northwestern team. But what else are you looking forward to this week?
I want to see how Nebraska responds in their next couple games, because Isaac Copeland Jr. out for the season with a torn ACL against Ohio State. They're going to be hosting a Wisconsin team that's suddenly getting hot, and then on Saturday they've got to go into the snake pit of Illinois, who's suddenly become a little bit feisty in the conference, unlike Penn State, probably one of the bigger disappointments in Power 5 conference opponents.
Yeah, and the huge game coming up Friday night, Michigan and Iowa, I think that has a chance to be a really good game.
Yes. Chad, I did have a comment now that I've been unmuted. Penn State and West Virginia, before the season started, played a charity game. Should both those teams apologize to whatever charity that was for?
That might be necessary. Let's quickly jump over to the Big East. And Tytel, let me start with you again on the first place team in the Big East. And, you know, I think there's two teams we've got to really discuss here. Let's start with Villanova.
Let's start with a team that lost to Penn. There's so many of them this year. It's amazing the Wildcats turnaround. 8-4 mid-December, back-to-back losses at my Quakers and to the Jayhawks. And since then, unstoppable. 8 wins in a row. Very young team, only a pair of seniors and Pascal and Booth. Not a single junior among the top 8 in the rotation. That's what happens when you have 4 guys who leave for the draft. Huge game next month at Marquette on February 9th. I actually think the winner of that game will be the number 1 seed in the conference tourney. And somehow 8 of the 10 teams in this league have a losing record in conference play. How does that mathematically happen?
That is wild, and it part of it has to do with how good these top 2 teams are. Joby, you actually have in your J&G Marquette, who's on the right there, better than Nova even.
Yeah, and part of it is the loss column. I mean, you know, Furman has come off the rose, and Penn is a tier 2. As opposed to the swing of tier 3s or the 3 tier 1s that Marquette does. Because then you go down and you look, oh, you know, Louisville, neutral court, Florida State, neutral court, at Butler, at Creighton, at Providence, isn't really that earth-shattering. I think Buffalo at home and Wisconsin at home, even though they're at home, are better wins because they're strong teams that are clearly wearing white right now in the field. So – you know, I think Marquette's resume is right now better because of what happened to Villanova early in the season. But, wow, Villanova has turned it around so far. But you pointed out, we've got 2 teams run away. It's the opposite of the Big Ten, where you have those teams right at the bottom, and thus it's pushing a lot of other teams up into the field. These top 2 teams are kind of pushing everybody down because a losing conference record, while it's not a disqualifier, it is not looked on very kindly.
Yeah. But in some ways,
half a game separating those teams.
Somebody's going to get to a winning record.
That just registered. There's a half of game between 3rd and 8th place. That is
10th place.
Or 3rd and 10th place. Yeah. That is ridiculous.
But let me also add to that, Marquette is reminiscent of Xavier from last year, in that unlike Villanova, they're not blowing teams away. It was like sitting in the dentist chair beating DePaul at home and even having to survive one of Xavier's better shooting games, but they were able to match them 3-for-3 and ended up going 2-0 last week.
So yeah. Xavier, who lost to, I think, Providence or Marquette. Well, no, they had a little Marquette, and had they won that game, they'd be in 3rd place.
Yep, and the upcoming schedule's there on the right side of the screen. You got a lot of bubble here, so you look at almost every game as having some significance. Of course, we mentioned that St. John's at Duke game coming up Saturday, but St. John's at Creighton. Creighton is close to the bubble. Seton Hall at Butler is 2 very bubble-ish. There's bubble implications everywhere in this conference. So it's going to be interesting the rest of the way, especially if Villanova and Marquette fight things out and who can get the additional bids out of this conference between those other 8 teams. But let's keep things rolling right over to the American Conference. And Tytel, you know, just when we're sitting here singing some of Temple's praises, they have a big lead against Cincinnati and blow it.
I'm telling you, Penn must have softened them up because Cincinnati took care of business against the Owls. Mm-hmm. They reopened Fifth Third Arena with a home loss to the Buckeyes in the season opener. Since then, 12 home games, 12 home wins. 18 of 20 overall. If they can meet SMU in Memphis to start February, which I think they will, we're going to have the game of the season in the conference. 20-3 Bearcats at 22-1 Houston, the AAC game of the year. And kudos to Coach Cronin, on pace to win 22 or more games for the 9th straight year.
And David, UCF, who we were claiming was right there at the tournament team, laid a complete egg on Sunday.
They did. Went to Memphis. Memphis is playing a lot better now, to be fair, but this is a UCF team that if they're a tournament team, they certainly need to do more than what they've done. They're 15-4. That's got to be one of the quietest 15-4 records for any multi-bid league team ever. It's just unbelievable how flimsy that is, despite the fact that the record is as bloated as it is. I notice you still had them inside your bubble. I think most of us do, but you can't deny that they're kind of – they certainly don't have a large margin for error. And whenever you're that close to the bubble, you don't really need – you need to hold serve against non-tournament teams, and they didn't do that on Sunday.
Yeah, it was a game that they really could have used. Joby, the upcoming schedule in the American should be showing up on the screen right there. Kind of circle this game Thursday, though. Temple at Houston, you know, I think that could be a big one.
That's a really big one. You know, does Temple get the sweep? After all, they're the one team in the entire country who has a win over Houston, you know, and if they get a second, do the, yeah. Now, at the end of the year, we might say Temple needs to be more than just the team that beat Houston, but wow. The fact is, this conference has a number of teams. The team I'm looking at that has shown just a hint of life. Could Connecticut be the team that knocks Central Florida out? Because I don't know how intimidating Orlando is. Yeah, you know, as
Mickey, that is a big rivalry. Civil conflict, you know.
Yeah, the civil Mickey.
Yeah, and I think Connecticut could walk in and actually win that game, which would be a devastating element to Central Florida at the end of the day. And that, once again, as each of these teams lose to the bottom half of the conference, it's just waiting for Houston to lose one more time to really make the whole thing tip over, as I've said in a previous show, like a pyramid scheme, like a Ponzi scheme.
Let's keep rolling here, and Sleek, limping in as we move to another conference. I want to move over to the West Coast Conference now with the Gonzaga Bulldogs. And David has been claiming for a couple weeks now, if you followed our bracket rundown shows, that this Gonzaga team is a one seed right now.
Correctly.
David, I wasn't asking.
Correctly.
I want to get Sleek's thoughts, though, on this Gonzaga team. I'll bring up their profile. You know, do you feel that this team – not are they going to deserve one of the day if they at the end of the day if they keep winning, but do they deserve it right now with a Duke win and a lot of nothing?
I think they have the personnel to be in one seed, but unfortunately they're not going to get the paper because teams like St. Mary's and San Francisco, they're starting to get cannibalized in the West Coast Conference, and Gonzaga's probably going to end up running away by 4 or 5 games. So any loss, and you can throw a one seed out the window, probably drag them down to a 3 or 4 in the process if that were to happen.
And I think that's a great point, John, actually, that we've been touting how much better the West Coast Conference is than in prior years. But one of the net effects of that, and Joby, let me bring you in on this, one of the net effects is that San Francisco, San Diego, BYU, these teams have started to eat each other up,
yeah,
and drag down those resumes.
Yeah, San Francisco really needed the win in Dublin against Buffalo, mm-hmm. to be honest. That would have helped the entire
– San Diego loss this weekend did not help them.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Thank you for pointing that out as well. But they could afford a San Diego loss if they had a tournament-level win to pair with it. They don't. They've played strong. They look good. It's an eye test thing with them. And West Coast Conference teams do not get the benefit – that I've learned from the committee on eye tests, unless your name is Gonzaga, because St. Mary's most certainly doesn't get the benefit. You know, they've been knocked out a few times despite gaudy records and bloated margin of victories.
Right. And Tytel, I think you wanted to discuss another team here. Well, what about BYU?
My theme tonight is teams that were good and turned bad, or bad that turned good. BYU, another one of those. They lost their last 3 non-conference games, 8-7 to finish December. Have rebounded against a admittedly weaker West Coast Conference, 5-2 in conference play, pair of 19 point or more road losses at St. Mary's and against San Fran. We're good teams, but you shouldn't be losing by 19 of them if you have a prayer of making it to March. 10-1 at home this season, only losing to Houston, so a bit of a home court hero. The Zags come to Provo for a visit on Thursday. They arguably have the best junior class in the nation. Each of their top 6 players are juniors. So if none of them take a Mormon mission next year, I think they could give Gonzaga a serious test in 2020.
Yeah, that is definitely the game of the week here in this week, Gonzaga-BYU. I think the San Francisco-St. Mary's game could be good, but I just don't know that it has the implications left that it would have had.
David, Chad, real quick, I know we got to keep it moving. Yeah. You did kind of gloss over the Santa Clara-Gonzaga game. Santa Clara, really good defensive effort there, holding it within 21 possessions in a 98-39 thriller.
I think that was like 43-19 early on in the game. That was unbelievable. Yeah. But David, let me stick with you over in the Mountain West, another conference that's probably heading to a single bid unless there's an upset in the conference tournament. And Nevada continuing to roll, actually looking a little bit better, you know, especially what they did to Colorado State after they had struggled for a few games.
Yeah, and I mean, they certainly blew out Colorado State. Nevada, I like this Nevada team, and it's kind of weird talking about them because suddenly I see that they're ranked seventh, and I see that they're on 2 and 3 lines, and while I like them, I don't like them that much. So when I talk about why I don't think they're a 3 seed or why I don't think they're the seventh best team in the country, I come off as saying that I don't think that they're good. I think they're very good, just not that good. And when you look at their profile, other than the bloated record, and 19-1 is really good, where is that coming from? And I know that, like, their resume is what it is. Like, you can only play the teams that are on your schedule. But they haven't really done anything. Some of the wins,
they have 9 wins away from home.
I like that a lot. Yeah. Arizona State. Is Arizona State a top 10 team? Does beating them by 6 scream 7th in the country? Fresno State, you know, I know that they won by 10, but that was kind of a nail biter all the way down. Grand Canyon, we love the Lopes. Winning there is not easy, but they won by 8. I just don't think that they're the 7th best team.
I guess very good. For me, you know, you look at that New Mexico game and how ugly it was, but, you know, I think at some point you just got to say, you know, okay, that was just an off night and everything else has been so good.
Chad, tried not to mention that because to pick one game and harp on it isn't really fair either.
Yeah, like you do with Gonzaga and the one over Duke. But let's keep moving on here.
Wrong. Nevada came within inches of an amazing Martin 3 of we're having a Boise State tier 3 or 4 loss to the MAC, you know. Yeah.
But Tytel, is there a second team in this conference in Utah State, or is it not really a contender?
They are not a contender. I feel like we should only talk about Nevada every week, but just to mix it up, I'll talk about Utah State tonight. Lost to 2 of the other best 3 teams in the conference earlier this month, Nevada and Fresno, to fall to 1-2 in conference play. Another team that's bounced back over the past couple of weeks. They've won 4 in a row. Should be San Jose State and UNLV at home for their next 2. Then they get the revenge game at Fresno on February 5th. They've been playing very shorthanded. John Knight out, Torian Knight out, Crew Ainge, who I assume is related to Danny Ainge because there's like 50 Ainges out there who play basketball, all out. A revelation, 6'11 freshman Portuguese big man, Nemias Paita. Remember the name. He's been a revelation past 7 games, 13 points a game, 9 rebounds a game, 3 blocks a game. I don't know what the heck they're doing in Portugal, but they're exporting some great basketball players.
Well, Tytel, is this the 7th best team in the country, this Nevada team?
I mean, you can make the argument. I would say no, but I think you can really make the argument.
Okay.
Let's move. We just talked about 2 Western conferences that have a shot to win an NCAA tournament game. Let's talk about a conference out West that does not have a shot to win an NCAA tournament game, the Pac-12, where Washington is now 7-0 in conference, and if anybody, you know, is looking good in this conference that we can actually start talking about, isn't the Huskies a team?
I give – the Oregon swing was very strong for Washington. I give them credit. They finally beat a team that will get, like, a top 8 seed in the NIT. Way to go. It all came aside. That's not – if it was any other conference, would we be sitting here going – way to go, NC State. You won at Clemson. You know, I mean, that we wouldn't. We'd ignore the game. So Washington plays in a crappy conference. No way I would say it, you know, especially for a Power 5. It's one of the worst we've seen since the Pac-12, maybe, was it 5 or 6 years ago? Good for you. You're 7-0. Washington's probably inside the bubble because of that. But give me some meat. Give me some meat to work with because unfortunately, they just don't have it in this conference except possibly the Arizona schools. And that they're going to have to do – they can't just fall asleep, you know, when they play the Arizona schools who at least have some net ratings in the 60s that can get you, oh, you went on the road in Arizona, you get a tier one win.
Well, speaking about the Arizona schools, it was actually a team that played that beat both of them, Titel. How about USC and Andy Enfield's squad picking up having their best weekend of the season by far?
It was. What's more amazing to me is the fact that what was leading up to it. Talk about a rough January to start. Yeah. You got your former assistant Tony Bland pleading guilty to a bribery charge. You got a forward Jordan Utcher transferring to Georgia Tech. You got a guard in Kevin Porter Jr. who's out with both injury and suspension, and the team was 9-8 a couple of weeks ago after getting swept by the Oregon schools on the road. Somehow, they take all that turmoil, put it in their rearview mirror, the UCLA and Arizona and ASU 3-0 against good traditional schools, obviously not this year. If they can somehow upset the Huskies on the road this Wednesday, I don't think they can, but then, Ann, I didn't think they'd bounce back, no 3-0. They might win this freaking conference, which is impossible. Great experience in the starting lineup with 3 juniors and 2 seniors. Great size up front, 6'10 Benny Bowright, 6'11 Nick Rakosevic. They're a threat to win the Pac-12.
So the huge game Wednesday night, they're at Washington. I didn't think we'd be saying that a couple weeks ago, but I am circling that. And then, of course, the big, big game Thursday night, Arizona State. If Arizona has any serious at-large hopes, it's now a must-win game after what happened with getting swept against the Southern Cal schools. Right. Salika, let me bring you back in and go over to the Atlantic 10 quickly.
Chad, I had a question here. Real quick, it involves the Stallings Award. Is that a Power 5 school, or is it any of the multi-bid leagues? Like, is San Jose going to run away with it, or do Cal and Wazoo have it?
That's something we are going to decide later on in the season, so keep your ears tuned. I think we'll have to have a vote on who qualifies for that award even.
Yeah.
But Salika, we mentioned them last week. There they are still in first place. George Mason, Davidson also 6-1, the top of the Atlantic 10.
Well, winning in one of the tougher road environments at Dayton is going to help put them over the edge. And having to struggle a little bit against a crosstown rival, GW, it does put them first place for the moment. But it also helped for George Mason that VCU, even though they got upset by Rhodey, they were able to knock Duquesne from the ranks of teams that have only one loss in conference play as well.
Yeah, it was an awful Wednesday night in this conference as St. Louis loses to Duquesne and VCU loses the game to Rhode Island. St. Louis followed it up, Titel, with a loss to Davidson as well. Dave, how serious would we take Davidson?
Not very. Oh, did you say David?
I said Titel.
Oh, I'm sorry. My mistake.
Okay, we look alike. I get that. It's very tricky because they have 5 losses, but they're all away from home, either road or neutral. So the epitome of a home court hero. They lost Peyton Aldridge last year. They bring back Grady and Goodmanson. And then out of nowhere, they get this kid, Luka Brikovic. He's the replacement as the big man for Aldridge. He didn't score against St. Louis, so I'm not saying he's going to win Conference Player of the Year or anything. He is the biggest Austrian import since Arnold Schwarzenegger. And this team does not start a single senior, so I think you can pencil them in as conference champions next season.
David, let me ask you about another team now in 5th place after the loss to Rhode Island. But VCU did bounce back with a Duquesne win. Any shot at an at-large bid? Should they not get the automatic?
There's a shot. Titel is probably – I'd like to get his opinion on this too. But when you look at the VCU profile, you'll notice that it's different from anybody else in the rest of the conference. It has some stuff on it. Whereas nobody else really does. Now, what's on there? How valuable is it really? There it is, because they've got the
Texas.
Win at Texas. Hofstra at home. I don't know how much credit you get for beating Hofstra at home, but at least it's something. I mean, you could, if it were debate class, you could make a case for them if you really had to based on the win at Texas. But how about the neutral floor win against Temple, who's sort of bubblish themselves? If they blow through the rest of the league and end up 14-2 or 13-3, so winning out or only dropping one more, you're talking about winning at Dayton, who, while not good, is tough to beat at home, winning at Mason, who got off to a slow start but who's playing really well right now. There's enough there to argue that they would belong in, especially if the bubble continues to smell as bad as it does now. But they essentially got to win them all. There is it's 0-2 and one more strike and they're out. I know, like, just from the email, Tytel didn't even think that he probably already thinks it's too late.
Well, let's get his thoughts on it then.
This is a one-bid league. If VCU runs the table and then loses to whoever in the conference tourney title game, this is still a one-bid league. Your only two top 100 over-the-radar wins are 1 point against Texas, 6 points against Temple. There's a very realistic chance, as we've said for over the past hour, that neither of those two losers even make the field. So if you're telling me VCU, even with a 26 or 27 win season, is making it when you've only beaten like Hofstra, forget it.
Thank you. Okay, I kind of agree with that at this point. I don't think they had the margin for error, for especially with the Charleston loss and the Old Dominion loss. Even the Rhode Island game was too much of a.
I will say this though, in defense of VCU, if it comes down to them and NC State, for example, their non-conference strength of schedule of six might be the thing that saves them.
Oh,
yeah.
Keep disagreeing, keep being wrong. The upcoming
schedule there, you maybe circle that Saturday game of George Mason at VCU. I also want to give a quick shout out to St. Joe's and losing to Penn, correct, Tytel? You want to give the undefeated Big Five champs a shout out?
I mean, I used it for my final thought last week, but briefly, yes. Now we're 4-0 in Big 12 in Big Five play. For only the second time in my entire life. The last time we did it, we made the tourney. I don't think this is our year since we've already been swept by the hated Princeton Tigers, but I didn't know if I'd ever see it again in my lifetime. So bravo, Coach Donahue, got it done.
All right. Real quick, Stalika, Buffalo still in the rankings as well out of the Mid-American Conference. Did suffer the loss to Northern Illinois, though, over this week.
Yeah, that was another game where they ended up losing in the closing seconds. But they were able to rebound after a bit of a tougher-than-expected win at Kent State. But I think the game you really have to circle on the calendar for the Bulls this week is going to be Friday night when they go to Bowling Green. Unfortunately, the Falcons also had their 10-game winning streak in the MAC snap, but you can't sleep on Ball State at home either.
Yeah, I'll throw those standings up there real quickly just because to show that – where Bowling Green is there, but they are both now tied for first place in the East Division, actually tied for first place. So it is a game to definitely circle for Buffalo. But on that note, I do want to pull this down and run through each of you for any other final thoughts of the evening. And Joby, let me start with you.
Sure. All right. So you've got teams like Central Florida and Temple in the American. You have teams like Arizona State, Arizona, and Washington. Washington hasn't beaten anybody. Arizona teams can't win in L.A. You've got teams like Texas with awful records. And you have teams like NC State who have strength of schedules that, you know, if they had 1,000 teams, it would be 998 fifth. It's just awful. Auburn in free fall, Indiana free fall, Nebraska free fall. Do you know what all those teams have in common? They're in the field right now. I mean, that's the bubble is not very good.
I think we say this every year, but some reason it really.
I think this year is worse than normal.
Okay. Stalika.
I do have to thank the puppet for his kind words towards the end of the show last week, because one of the things I found out after we left the air on my last show, unfortunately, one of my younger sisters had passed away, and it was tough on us and our family, but we really did like her Special Olympics basketball game. So if you're looking for a possible charitable cause, this would certainly be one to honor her memory. So, Mary Jane, our whole family loves you.
Yeah, and you know, we've all been with you, John, and all this, and your family and everything.
Thank you very much.
Got to give you all our best wishes. Yeah. Let's turn back to a little bit of basketball, though. Tytel, any other thoughts for the evening?
I certainly can't top that. But I'll try to give it a nice second place to a shout-out for Minnesota senior power forward Jordan Murphy. He almost single-handedly helped the Gophers upset Iowa by 5 points on Sunday, 23 points, 11 rebounds, and 6 assists. While doing so, he also passed the great Joe Barry Carroll as the number 2 rebounder in the history of the Big Ten Conference. trailing only a Hall of Famer out of Ohio State named Jerry Lucas. Think about this. This is a conference that has had so many national champions. Indiana's won a title. Michigan's won a title. Michigan State's won a title. And he's number two in the history of the conference. I don't know how he's going to translate to the NBA. He's a 6'7 forward, and he can't shoot threes. However, if the Gophers make the tourney, I'm not sure if they will, but if they do, and they face a team that doesn't hit the boards that hard, perhaps we will somehow, some way, see a coach named Patino win a game in March.
Chet? Did Chet?
David, do you want to finish us off? I apologize. I lost my mic there.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, it was wonderful. We couldn't hear you. I thought you were gone. It's just kind of funny how college basketball, you sort of live in the moment. And teams that weren't on your radar in November and December are suddenly on your radar now, and you think it's as if they'd always been there, even though people weren't talking about them before. And we look at Ole Miss, and what a great job their coach has done. A first-year coach started off, I think, unanimously picked to finish 14th in the SEC, which is last. Even when they ran up a big out-of-conference record, everybody was like, oh, well, they're eating off the pastry cart, no real big wins. They're ranked in the top 25. I know they had a rough week last week, or they've cracked the top 25. But it's one of the bigger surprises in all of college basketball. The coach doing a fantastic job, did a fantastic job at Middle Tennessee, going to, I think, going to the round of 32 2 years in a row and just missing the tournament last year. And you kind of give it up for strength and conditioning coach Handy and and the job he has done.
David, you know he's not at Ole Miss.
Well, yeah. Well, of course he isn't. What? Why would?
On that note, I don't even know where our show has gone now, but I do want to thank everybody for joining us on behalf of John Slica, John Titel, David Griggs, Joby Fortson. I'm Chad Sherwood. We'll be back again later this week at Under the Radar and some type of bracket rundown show as well. But have a good evening, everybody. We'll talk to you again real soon.